Welcome on into the 8 o'clock hour. Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle, halfway home with you, taking you up until 10 o'clock tonight on 92.9 The Game. Great conversation about the Falcons tonight. We'll take more of your calls later in the show at 404-726-0929. Do you think they're a legit playoff contender right now? Go vote on the poll as well at C. Thomas Radio. Yes, they're ready, or no, we need to see more. But right now on the WadeFord.com hotline, going to shift gears for just a couple of minutes and talk with one of our favorites, Bill Bender, senior writer for the Sporting News. Bill, hot take, or is there something there? Joel Klatt comes out today and says, quote, Penn State needs to start their coaching search with Nick Saban. You buying that even remotely?
I mean, that's going straight for the top, right? I don't know. I think there's so many names that you could attach to that list, and it's easy to start. I mean, yeah, you call and say, hey, are you interested? If not, I think you would have to look at the usual suspects, right? The Matt Rhule, Kurt Cignetti, Eli Drinkwitz, I find interesting. Manny Diaz. That's the list. And the thing about it is, the guy that takes this job is going to be, a guy that definitely is probably going to be a Power Four coach. I don't think you can get it go any lower than that.
What about Lane Kiffin? I think it would be an interesting fit, but he certainly has the pedigree.
Well, I think Lane Kiffin's interesting a lot of places. And the hard part here is, isn't he a guy that would be a fit at Florida? If that popped open, there's a lot of rumors about Billy Napier this week. He's going to have to dispel that. And the other end of it is, he's built Ole Miss into a – they're undefeated, number five in the country. So why would you go somewhere else where they're maybe not number five in the country?
Speaking of which, Georgia gets Ole Miss this weekend. We'll get into that in a little bit. But what did you make of all the – there was a lot of shenanigans in the Georgia-Auburn game. What did you make of the touchdown, no touchdown, and then what did you make of timeout gate with Kirby Smart? Listen, I love Kirby. Obviously, two national championships, best coach in college football. But come on. I mean, that was not his best look.
It has produced some memorable memes. There's no question. There's no doubt about that. Particularly the I saw one where it was like, if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands, and they were making a timeout sign. I thought that was pretty funny. I think Kirby, obviously, that was a tough game. The controversial calls aside, what I took away from it, though, is Gunnar Stockton made some plays in a very tough environment, right? That they were able to pull out that win. Everybody knows the Jordan-Hare Stadium has this the way about it. It's a tough place to win. So I think they made the plays necessary to win. The spread looks a little funny this weekend. I think it's going to be an all-out great football game against Ole Miss.
Yeah, I thought it was – I mean, I don't want to say insanely high and be hyperbolic, but very high. I mean, kind of close to it considering the close calls that Georgia's had this season. And, Bill, oh, yeah, what happened last year as well. A couple of other games I want to get into with you. LSU Vandy. We know Vandy's been, to call them pesky or spunky, might be disingenuous to how well they've played. I know they got the loss, obviously, but do you give Vandy a chance at home against LSU?
Well, I think so. I mean, they're favored. And the interesting part of this game is kind of how every weekend in the SEC is interesting, that you have this Vanderbilt offense that can obviously put up a ton of points. And then you have LSU with a top 15 scoring defense. And both of these teams are playoff hopefuls, and they can't afford to lose this game. You can't in terms of the playoff race. If you want to get to 9 or 10 wins, 10 wins probably required to get the playoff. So I think it adds to the intensity. Vanderbilt obviously has a very long losing streak against you, and that makes it interesting as well. So I think it's going to be a really fun game. I like the Tigers to win, but wouldn't be surprised if Diego Pavia and company were able to get a win there.
Speaking of surprises, are you surprised that Notre Dame's favored by almost 10 points against USC at home?
A little bit, because I think that USC offense is scoring a ton of points. Jaden Mayav has obviously been very good. And, you know, this USC offense scores a lot of points around the running game. Mekhi Lemon's one of the best running receivers in the country. They torched Michigan last week. That was kind of eye-opening to me, especially coming off the Illinois loss. The Big Ten travel thing is real, but this is a rivalry game. Is it a stretch to me to say, okay, like if Georgia loses to Ole Miss, Georgia still could go 10-2 and get the playoff. I think the loser of USC Notre Dame is probably out. I know USC would have two losses, but they still got to play Oregon.
So if I told you that Tennessee going to Tuscaloosa, it's going to be a 38-35 final, you agree or you disagree?
38-35 final either way?
Either way. I think this is going to be one of the biggest, more fun shootouts of the season with the way those two offenses can go.
It'd be a redo of Georgia-Alabama at that point. Be a lot of fun to see. And to your point, I mean, want to see how Joey Aguilar gets after it against this Alabama defense. And then on the other side, Ty Simpson, can he throw the ball down the field against this Tennessee defense? I mean, and is Jim Miller going to play? There is so much at that game. I think they're going to get up and down. If it is 30, to your point, if it finishes 38-35, yes, Tennessee won that football game. Is that a stretch?
No, especially with, you know, the fact that we saw there is a – I know he's been red hot, but, you know, Florida State did lay out a formula to make Ty Simpson look, I mean, at least human. He's looked superhuman at times since then. But, you know, if a team, you know, with Tennessee and the way that they got into it with Georgia, they're battle-tested right now. They almost won that football game. So I think if maybe they can tap into some of that and really hit the film study this week, maybe they're the team that can, you know, slow Ty Simpson down. You know, Bill, I've heard some people say he should be in the Heisman consideration, Ty Simpson.
Well, we did our midseason All-Americans today, and he's our quarterback. You know, I mean, the only one interception going on the road and beating Georgia and beating Missouri and putting up the numbers that he's put up, I think it's definitely something to watch. So he's definitely a guy that we look at and going into the second half of the season. He'll have those stages. The Heisman race to me is still very wide open, though. You know, whether it's him, Fernando Mendoza, I still like Jeremiah Smith at Ohio State. He's scoring a touchdown every week. So there's a lot of guys involved in that race that could win it.
Should Reuben Bain be in that mix?
I mean, why not? He's a really good – Arvell Reese at Ohio State, the best player on the best defense in the country right now. Reuben Bain he just has been amazing. So, and we'll get to see Reuben get a spotlight Friday night against Louisville in what should be a fantastic game.
Talking all things college football with our good buddy Bill Bender, and make sure you check him out in the sporting news. Speaking of that one, we've been talking a lot about maybe some overhyped and oversized spreads. 13.5, I know Miami's been great this season, but Louisville can pack a punch, and I think that game's going to be a lot closer than that. What do you think?
I do, too. I think that Louisville running game is very good. You know, Jeff Brohm has played the underdog rule, but not to perfection, but, you know, they're a tough underdog. And, you know, every time we make assumptions, and I'm guilty of this too, you start to project teams to go undefeated and playoff and all that stuff. And then all of a sudden, they're not. So I think, it's definitely something to keep in mind. I like Miami to win the game, but I think it'll be a little bit tighter. The one I wanted to ask you about is, you know, what's the reaction down there? I'm a little surprised that Georgia Tech's an underdog this week. I understand some of the logic because Duke can throw it around with Mensah, who has a bunch of touchdown passes. But isn't Georgia Tech going to slow them down with the running game?
I think it's purely because the game is not here. I think if the game was here, I think Tech would be probably a slight favorite. I think people are looking at Georgia Tech right now and they're saying we're waiting for the other shoe to drop, because this is so surreal what's going on right now on the flats and the job that Brent Key's doing. I think there's just a cautious optimism from the fan base and from the media right now. And they're looking at it like, Bill, let's make no bones about it. Georgia Tech is a better football team than Duke, and they absolutely should win this game. But I think to have any out to give yourself, oh, this might be a trap game. They got a quarterback. Duke is better than you think. 3-0 in the ACC, same record as Georgia Tech. I think it's one of those, we want to protect our hearts almost situation going on with Georgia Tech. But I'm sure you agree. But in my mind, there's no doubt who the better football team is. It's Georgia Tech.
I have them winning, and that's why I was a little surprised by that line. There are some funky lines this week, especially with some underdogs, and we're at that point in the season where you see some teams lose those type of games. But I just look at that Yellow Jackets team. I think they're very good, and I like the toughness around them. They've got three guys in the top 15 in the ACC in rushing yards, led by Haynes King. So I definitely think they're in this game. The pressure will amp up, like you say, when you have a magical season and some don't really believe, but it's hard not to believe in what Brett Key's been able to accomplish there.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is going to be another game. Unfortunately, you know, we've begun to parse down the games that Haynes King is going to have to go full Haynes King. And unfortunately, I think this is one of them. So it's like adding, you know, it's like a running back, essentially. You know, you only get so many hits. So I think this is going to be another game because of the quarterback on the other side that he's going to have to go 150%. And that's really the only speed he knows anyway. But this is another one of those games, you know, you're not just going to be able to roll the ball out there and, you know, hang 35 on them. They're going to have to compete and fight. I think Georgia Tech is better, but Haynes King is going to have to bring his A game on the road, which I think is going to be a really good environment for a noon kickoff. But I just think I agree with you at the end of the day that Tech is just the better team. All right, before we get out of here, A&M, I'm not sure what to make of them. I don't doubt their talent. We know the resources are poured in there, but I think it's Bill, it's a little bit of what we just talked about with Georgia Tech. Like, are you waiting for the other shoe to drop with A&M because of their history, or you think this is a legit squad?
Well, I like the defense. Cassius Howell's a kind of a game breaker for them. And then they've like kind of the same formula as Georgia Tech. They're very physical running the ball. Marcel Reed's played well. He adds to the running game. And the big thing with them is the schedule. You don't play Ole Miss, Alabama, Tennessee, or Georgia. So, like, we're expecting them to win the 10 games. And they have that victory against Notre Dame in their back pocket. So it makes them a really dangerous team in this playoff race. And if the SEC were to get the five teams in the playoff and Texas A&M takes care of business in some of these road games, they'll definitely be in the mix. One thing to watch with them is they play at LSU next week. And LSU's really good at night. That'll be the game to circle for the Aggies. I think they take care of business this week, and we'll see if they can get to that 10-win mark. They're playing Arkansas this week, though, and you know that rivalry. They get after each other a little bit, so none of their games are taken for granted. I think that goes into the perception.
Yeah, Arkansas, unfortunately, they don't have the hogs this year, pun intended there. They're built, unfortunately. We appreciate the time, as always. Looking forward to chatting soon.
Hey, I always enjoy the conversation. Thanks for having me on.
All right, that is Bill Bender, senior writer there of the Sporting News. Make sure you check him out there. Yeah, the A&M and Georgia Tech, I feel like they're kind of like in similar boats in the different conferences where, you know, the excitement is almost hampered a little bit by this clutching of the pearls by, like, are we this good? Are we really this good? Or is it going to be another year where the shoe drops and it's like, ugh, we got to number 4 in the country. We got to number 10 in the country. And then the bottom fell out. I don't think so. I think both teams are going to be in it for the long haul, and we'll have a lot to say at the end. All right, good stuff there from Bill Bender. When we get back, let's hear from Coach. He joined Dukes and Bell today. Raheem Morris exclusively on 92.9 The Game. It's Chris Thomas tonight. Back with you here on 92.9 The Game. It's Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle taking you until 10 o'clock. Plenty more to do. We're going to get to some NFL true and false. We got a producer six-pack with Oren, so he's going to be heavily involved in the back end of the program, because it was, Oren, it was me and the callers for the first half of the show. We took a ton of your calls on if the Falcons are ready to be deemed a legit playoff contender right now. So appreciate everybody who checked in. If you didn't get through on the lines, make sure you hit up the poll. It is up right now at C. Thomas Radio. Are the Falcons a legit playoff contender right now? Yes, they're ready, or no, we need to see more. So great interaction. Love chatting Falcons football with you on 92.9 The Game. Also love hearing from our head coach, Raheem Morris. He joined Dukes and Bell earlier today, and the first thing they asked him is, dude, how you feeling after that win on Monday?
I can't complain, man. Just getting ready for another tough game on our schedule, going out to the West Coast, facing this tough 49er team. So really feeling good about that. And just right in the middle of preparation, so giving a call to you guys, man.
Hey, Rob, like I said, we'd hug you if you were there, man, if we could be in person, because what a game. That's one of the best wins. I mean, I know last year that Thursday night was epic, but to go on Monday Night Football and look so good on defense, to just running the football is a mentality. It just seems like you guys just had it cooking all night long.
You know, I got to give a lot of credit to the coaches for preparing the game plans, getting the guys ready, along with coaching the game plan is being able to present the game plan and get to these guys so you can feel and see the understanding, and you definitely can see and feel it on Monday night. And the guys were flying. They played as a team. You see a bunch of selfless acts out there in order to win those type of games when you play in those environments, and that was absolutely outstanding.
Coach, you were ahead of the curve because you see him every day, and you said weeks ago, he's the best player in the NFL. Some people chuckled. Some people, around the country went, ha, Ron's just loving his own guy. Coach, he's the best player in the NFL. I mean, that show he put on Monday Night Football was impressive.
I mean, he's talented, man. I wouldn't knock people for chuckling. I'm fortunate enough that I get a chance to see him every day, how he prepares, how he works. I get a chance to see him practice. I get a chance to see him go out there in the games. I get a chance to see him push his guys, every single day. I got a chance to be with him throughout the course of this summer, talk to him, do all the things that you necessarily do when you got a great player and you feel it coming. And he's done nothing but live up to it. And I couldn't be more proud of Bijan or Bijan, whatever you want to call him this week.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, as LeBron James calls him, he's cold in a good way. He's so cold, he's hot. It is Coach Raheem Morris with us, guys. Our weekly visit, head coach of the Falcons. Yeah, man, the offense itself just looked great. Drake doing his thing. I guess the only things we could pick on was just two picks that were not caught by the Bills. What does Zach say about Michael? And we still know that Michael's only played 8 games as a starter. Is that just a part of the learning curve for him?
Yeah, we can't make those mistakes. Obviously we want to make the right reads, not make those mistakes, not give him an opportunity to catch those balls. And those are the things that you learn as a young quarterback. Those are things you won't do. Those things you want to get better. It's always things to coach, no matter how big the win is. It has one of those things that you can coach during wins, and those are always good things for us to look at, always things for us to go back and evaluate to make sure that we can protect the ball at all costs.
Rob, we know how tough Jake Matthews is. I heard you say day-to-day. Is there more to this? Do you think he plays Sunday night?
It'd be hard for me to bet against a Matthews. He's just that type of guy. He's going to do everything that he can do to play. I know him that well. He won't talk much about it. That's not his mentality. That's not his deal. But as we get later into the end of the week, I'm sure we'll have a better feel for what that is and how it looks. Obviously it's still fresh. Obviously you played a Monday night game. Obviously you got a short week, all the things working against him. But when you talk about a Matthews, particularly Jake, it'd be hard for me to count him out.
We talk about culture, Coach, and sometimes the fans hear that and they just roll their eyes. But the culture you've got, where you got so many guys rotating on defense, where if I had told you that the 4 guys that were going to get sacks on Monday night, nobody would have had that, Exacto or Quinella. But talk about the attitude where a guy goes, hey, I might only have 10 or 11 plays, but I'm going to make it work when I get out there.
It's been really nice to see just throughout the course of the season how we've rotated up front, how we've been able to get the guys, all 20 or so, 30 or so reps a game to keep them fresh, to have that same mentality as you try to get after that pass rusher, as you try to get after that quarterback. And these guys have really bought into the system. They bought into what we want to do and how we want to do it. I can't say enough positive things about what they've done and how they've done it. They've gotten better and better every single week. Some weeks have gave us, huge results like 4 sacks. And son, you don't get any, but you get the pressures, you get the ball out. You get the production on the back end. Or whatever the case may be, just stopping people. But, it showed up in a big way this week, and still Lamar left out there in the bone. And these guys, they're hungry, man. They're going after it.
Coach, how's Jalen coming? I thought he had a really good game the other night. I mentioned this to our audience yesterday. He led the team in quarterback pressures with 3. We had 15 against Josh. 4 sacks, as Mike alludes to. Where's Jalen Walker in this progression of him getting better each week and where you thought he would be, or is he right where, you know, he needs to be?
You know, it's kind of funny. He's shown probably more than what you would think from a first-year player. You know, we always talked about this last year, how much easier it is to play on the edge as opposed to being just thrown in there right from the beginning in the interior. But being on the edge, you know, I thought he would be right away a contributor when it came to rushing the passer and doing some of those different things. You know, obviously being able to utilize him and some of the things we walk him around and do some of the backer-like things when I'm dropping or, you know, rushing through the B-gaps from a stand-up position or some of that type of stuff. But he's really thrived at, you know, playing rundowns and being able to go out there and stop the run and set the edges and do some of those different things in the run game in the early D&D. That really kind of shocked us. You know, his strength, his center of gravity, his ability to set the edge and really lock, shock, lock, and escape people and get off blocks and make tackles has really shown up in a major way. Where I knew it would, just didn't know it would show up this quickly.
It's kind of hard to quantify the interior D-line play, especially when you're watching from the stands. But how good is Rook evolving? Speaking of like Rook, because he was a big contributor on Monday night.
You know, those guys all inside, you know, led by David, you know, inside being to go out there and just be the enforcer there and be, you know, just the fist to the defense to speak in bridge terms, you know, going out there playing with that ultimate toughness and Root going out there really contributing mostly as a pass rusher, but really all over the place, watching him get better and involved inside with his run game and do some of the different things, you know, all those guys. What are you talking about, Dulles? What are you talking about, Rook? You know, what are you talking about, Zach, who's at times been our sack leader, at times been our leader of pressure, at times been a guy who's been able to get some pushback. We've been able to rotate a few guys in there, whether it's been LaCal or Roberts this week. I'm really just kind of, you know, fired up with the rotation and the things that they've been able to do inside and the things they've been able to do on the edge together and how they worked around each other. It's been awesome.
How is Brick getting the most out of these guys? Coach, I get this, and you know, last year's last year, but some of these guys were here, and we've seen them play better. How is Brick getting more out of these guys?
You know, you started to see it last year, you know, with these guys, and you got to give a credit to each individual person as they got better throughout the season. They played a little bit last year as they started to play towards the end of the season. And then when Brick came in, just talked about the relationship that he established with those guys because it starts there first. You know, nobody cares about how much you know to him, how much you care. He's been able to show those guys how much he cares. You know, how much he cares about these guys. He's been able to bring coaches in here to be able to help, like a Nate Ollie, you know, and activate and Jockey Smith and really forming those relationships with all those guys being up front. Really being able to put it a part of our rush plan and our coverage plan, making it meet together, having those guys go out there and play together, and Brick being able to utilize their tools and everything that they have involved, and some of the stuff that he's brought from the Jets, some of the stuff that they had here, some of the stuff he's involved with other people. You can't say enough about the more open-mindedness of Brick or the open-mindedness of our guys. It's been one nice, you know, happy marriage, so to speak, as you've been looking at the progress.
It is Coach Raheem Morris, guys, live from Falcons camp here as we get ready for the 49ers. The only thing, if there's one negative, we've talked about it a little bit, is the kicking game. Most fans feel a 37-yarder, high percentage kick. What's up with Parker Romo? Is that simply execution at the line, or he just didn't do a good job of getting the foot where it's supposed to be?
You know, we kicked a low one the other day. You know, other than that, we nailed all our extra points, nailed the last one that really counted. We kicked a low one that got blocked, had a little pushback on that one, but didn't like the way we hit that one, kind of was off the line, and that one got that kind of blocked. But I wouldn't put it all on special teams. I did think our coverage units came to life. You know, Jalen went down and made a tackle. Mike Ford continues to dominate, you know, some of those guys, Felipe Franks, being able to watch DeMarco Hams go out there and play penalty football. So I did see the ultimate improvement there on special teams. Just would like to see some operational piece with our kicking game consistently throughout the process. It has gotten a little bit better. I do feel a little bit more comfortable, and I do hope our fans feel a little bit more comfortable. We got to clean up that one that got blocked yesterday.
Coach, before we talk about the 49ers, that Sunday night, guys, our guys going on the road to take on the 49ers, Ray-Ray McCloud and Darnell Mooney. I think we're clamoring to see these guys back in the lineup and not only participate but contribute in some way, shape, or form. Can you give us an update on what the situation is with those two guys?
You know, obviously with the Mooney, we're talking about the health issue and getting him back, and hopefully that thing works out this week so he can go out there and be a contributor. And, you know, obviously you got to make the best decisions to find out who can win the football game across the board or every position every single week. To see who's going to be up and contributing and making major factors for us. You know, last week our contributors majorly were, you know, Bijan and London, particularly when it came to accumulating the yardage. But the selfless acts across the board by Charlie Warner, by Kyle Pitts, by our upfront people, you know, contributors from as far as production standpoint, when you're talking about a guy like Tyler Allgeier, you know, but all those guys going out there being a perimeter setter, edge setters, doing the things necessary for us to go out there and score points. There is no 81-yard run without Casey Washington leading out front and really holding it down out there with a big-time block to spring a really special player out in the open grass and be able to get the most out of him.
All right, let's talk about the 49ers. We know they're banged up. We know that doesn't matter in the National Football League. You know Kyle very well, and he's going to have his guys ready. What do you see? What concerns you about this team, despite the fact that they're without a bunch of stars? But, again, when we're without our guys, nobody cares.
Nobody cares about who you're not with anyway. Mm-hmm. This league is built for that. That's the beauty of the National Football League. We know the toughness that the 49ers are going to go out there and play with. We've seen them go out there and get a big-time win in the same situation on the Thursday night game versus the Rams. These guys are the ultimate competitors. They'll go out there and play at a very high level. We've been playing against this guy. I have, personally, been playing against this guy for a long time, played with him, coached with him, done all the things that you can. So you know what type of mentality this game is going to be like and what it's going to be all about. So those are the things that you respect and love to play in these competitive type of environments. When you're going to play these type of guys.
How difficult is it to get ready for his offense? You said you've gone against him for many years. How difficult is it to prepare for Kyle's offense?
You know, Kyle's going to find out a way to exploit some of your weaknesses. He's going to find out a way to get out there and try to make sure you cleaned up every correction that you possibly had on your books. And he's also going to find a way to make him do those things while also executing what he wants to get done on offense. And that's ultimately run the football and be able to throw the ball efficiently, hold on to the ball, and keep you away from it. So we know those things. We just played, you know, the leading time of possession team in the National Football League. And really, it all came down to being about us. So we got to let the same mentality go into this game and go out there and try to find a way to get a big-time win.
That's what we said, Coach. It's about time people start saying, hey, how do we handle the Falcons as opposed to how do we handle the other team? Best of luck, man.
Oh, you guys are the best, man. Always good to talk to you.
Go get them.
Great stuff there from Coach after, historic's not the right word, but damn good win. Damn good win. Relax, Turtle. Don't get yourself too twisted in a knot over this one. I'm just excited, man. It was such a good win. Oh, and a lot of you on the phone shared that excitement with me. But, Oren, we did have a couple of callers that were, I got to see more, Well, that's fine, too. I get it. 7 years, no playoffs. You lose in the most unfathomable way possible, year in and year out. I get it. You got to see proof in the pudding a little bit more than just a couple of weeks. But when we get back, let's whip around the NFL. Oren's got 5 NFL true and false questions for me. We'll do that when we get back. Rolling along with you till 10 o'clock on Chris Thomas Tonight, 92.9 The Game. Back with you here on 92.9 The Game. Chris Thomas Tonight with you until 10 o'clock. Oren, for those in the music industry, they'll know this phrase, but to the rest of our audience, that's called hitting the post. It's called hitting the post. Maybe in another life I was a rock DJ spinning them records, who knows? Or maybe I was on an R&B station. This is The Quiet Storm with Turtle. Maybe. Who knows? Hey, I want to remind you, with Atlanta United season winding down, be sure to join Jason Longshore every Tuesday night for Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Jason has you covered all season long for the latest Atlanta United news. Plus, he's keeping tabs on international soccer as well. That's Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer. Tuesday nights on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, and available the next day on the Off the Woodwork podcast. Available anywhere you get your podcasts and on the Odyssey app. Speaking of which, before we get to some NFL true and false, big day for Atlanta sports. We are saying our farewells to a legend in the city, Brad Guzan.
And yes, indeed.
Yeah, he's hanging up the cleats. As a matter of fact, he joined the radio station today.
Joined Dukes and Bell, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, and discussed his decision to announce his retirement. I mean, when you see him up close, as I've had the privilege to over the last couple of years, looks like he could play another decade. I mean, the guy is
a specimen.
Ripped.
Yeah.
I mean, for a goalie, I mean, he is jacked up. And I'll tell you this: if the dude wants a career in media,
that's there too.
Snap of the finger. He's great. He's great on the air. He's great off the air. He's got great insight. He knows sports, not just soccer. And I think he has an even, I don't want to say brighter because his career was so good, but just as bright of a future as his next chapter unfolds, whether he wants to take a couple of years and just do whatever he wants to do, or if he wants to get into media, if he wants to get into coaching, whatever he wants to do. He's that type of guy that it's like, why is he good at everything?
He was the dude, and this was before you got to Atlanta, so. United first came about, they got all their players and whatnot, and Brad was the one who was like, oh, wow, we got Brad Guzan. Like, the U.S. national team goalie at that point was playing overseas, and it was the anticipation of bringing him over. When is he going to be here? You know, shout out to Drew Can, Alakan. Alakan was the goalie at that time. Was a great goalie, but we just knew that we had a guy that was overseas that was going to come here and was going to be like a cornerstone, a linchpin, like a foundational piece for this team. Comes over, you could just see his leadership from the back end and how it built going forward. And then a year later, holding up an MLS Cup down there at Magic City, getting it in. And, you know, Brad has been a very integral part of not just the United and the soccer sports scene, but also the Atlanta sports scene too, which is really awesome.
Yeah, he's as recognizable of an Atlanta athlete as anybody. You know, the average Atlanta sports fan knows Brad Guzan. I mean, that's just a fact. It may not be that way in every MLS city, but he is as synonymous with his squad as Trey is with the Hawks and
absolutely, yeah.
Bajan is with the Falcons and everybody else. So hat tip and salutations to Brad Guzan on the pitch, but we'll be seeing him around town. And again, whether he wants to be a broadcaster, whether he wants to do a podcast or a radio show, or he wants to be on TV or coaching, business, whatever he wants to do, that
dude's
going to
be successful. He's going to do it well.
He's just one of those guys where you just, again, you're just like, damn.
He's good.
Like, why can't I be that good at – can I be that good at anything, never mind everything? I mean, it's annoying. But, Brad, thank you, and we salute you, sir. All right, with that said, let's get to some NFL True False.
All right, so this first question, I want you to go with me here, okay? Go with me on this one. Old Tua down there in Miami put his foot in his mouth after Sunday's game, talking about how players weren't showing up to meetings and just maybe saying things that needed to be left in-house. Mike McDaniel, after the game, praised Tua's leadership. Then he heard the comments, and he was like, oh, hey, maybe you shouldn't have said that. Team captains didn't really respond to it. The culture in Miami is not great right now. They are saying it's better than what it was before. There is more accountability. There's more accountability this year than what it was in previous years.
And what's the common denominator there? There's a certain figure who enjoys stirring the pot, who's no longer playing this year and is filled with distractions.
He's down there. He's nursing an injury right now, but he's down there.
Yeah, but you know what happens when you lose somebody like that in a locker room who's toxic? It's like, oh, a breath of fresh air. A weight has been lifted. Everybody can walk around like they're not on eggshells anymore. Tyreek Hill was a mess in Miami.
But it hasn't gotten better, though, since Tyreek has gotten hurt. Like,
oh, not to the point where we're saving jobs.
No, we're not saving jobs. Jobs are gone. Which brings me to this question. I think Mike McDaniel is good as gone after this offseason. I think...
Or before.
Stephen Ross is going to go after old Bill. He's going to make a pitch for Bill. Bill's going to come in, and he's going to see the positions in the roster. He goes, all right, Tua, let me give you 1 year, buddy. Prove yourself in this 1 year. Because according to his contract, the Dolphins have a potential out of that huge four-year, $222 million contract that Tua signed. After the 2026 season, they can get out. It's about $35 million in dead cap space, but they can get out then. Mm. They can get out.
Falcons know about dead cap space for a quarterback.
True or false? After the 2026 season, Tua will not be the starting quarterback for the Miami Dolphins.
I'm going to one-up you on that. The following personnel will no longer be there after that time span. quarterback, head coach, GM.
All three gone.
All gone. And sooner rather than later. Oren, this is the easiest one. Miami has the most toxic culture in the entire NFL. It's not close. And they need to blow it up. Absolutely true.
Through 6 weeks of this season, your NFL frontrunner for MVP is Baker Mayfield. True or false?
Yeah. I hate to say it. He's been awesome. He's been awesome for a couple of years now. That's the problem. Listen, I think we all knew coming in from college, and I know he was a number one pick. I think we all knew he was elusive and he had escapability. He is, and it just looks weird because he's short and he's not, you know, built like Lamar Jackson. He is just out-guiling, gutting everybody out there. He is so sneakily athletic.
When they list and they talk about guys and just in sports in general who are gamers.
Yeah, that's him.
Baker is a gamer. I heard Andy and Randy talking about, like, a couple of days ago, or last week it was, is he a hooper? And they were having fun at that expense, making fun of people who call basketball players, you know, can he hoop, though, can he hoop? Baker's a football player, but he's also a gamer. Like, Baker just sort of, I feel like you can drop
him. He finds a way.
You can drop him in any setting.
Yeah, he just finds a way.
And he's going to get it done.
Yeah, he just finds a way. And, again, I think the biggest thing, too, though, is, like, he's that, but he's also just like a sneaky, ridiculously good athlete running the football.
Absolutely he is.
He clowns people on a weekly basis. It's the weirdest thing to see. So, yeah, he's absolutely the front runner right now. I don't actually think it's particularly close.
I don't think it is either. Although,
Daniel Jones.
I'd like to think we'll be half here in Atlanta. He's been doing really, really well. But
they're just not going to give it. If they didn't give it to Saquon last year.
No, and he ran for 2,000. The last guy who got it before Saquon.
Adrian Peterson.
Who ran for 2,000 yards. Yeah. Who didn't get it, so.
Yeah.
Through the first 6 weeks of this season, the Steelers are the class of the AFC. True or false?
Oof. Oh, boy. AFC kind of stinks, huh?
Yeah, it does.
It's like the Steelers, the Patriots, the Colts. I mean, what are we looking at here? No, Oren, you know my stance on this.
It still goes through KC?
Goes through KC. And you, don't look now.
3-2 now or 3-3?
Three and three. Scored 60-something points in the last 2 weeks. Kelsey's looking good. Mahomes is looking good. They're going to get Rashee Rice back. Xavier Worthy's doing his thing out there.
Hollywood Brown's doing his thing.
Running game is more online than it's been in the past couple of years.
Been a bit of a committee between Kareem and Isaiah Pacheco, but they're finding a way to get it done.
Yeah. Because of their experience, I'm still going to say KC, but Pittsburgh's right there. I mean, again, these are your teams. Pittsburgh, Kansas City, Indianapolis, New England. I mean,
teams that maybe you weren't assuming at the beginning of the
season.
Definitely it was.
Maybe.
You didn't see them anywhere after 6 weeks being in the positions that they're in right now.
New England
leading the AFC North. The AFC East, excuse me. Indy leading the AFC South. Pittsburgh leading the AFC North.
Yeah, the NFL is just wonky right now.
It's a bit upside down in the AFC right now. Question number 4. Jerry Jones spoke yesterday.
Well, I have some things on my mind.
Yes. Jerry says that the Cowboys' Achilles heel right now is their inability to stop the run. That defensive front who, like, I don't know, it could be a player that's out in the NFL right now that could possibly have helped you with that, but you don't want to pay that dude, so you send him to Green Bay and you see what's going on up there right now. But alas, Jerry talked about how there could be possibly a deal in the near future for the Cowboys. So true or false, the Cowboys add, in a trade, a defensive front seven starting piece?
Here's my answer to that. I don't care. And you know why, Oren? Because the Achilles heel is not the run defense. It's the freaking owner. It's the owner who needs, in the worst way possible, if he wants to see another title brought to Dallas, to give it up. To give it up and let somebody in there who knows what they're doing. I know they won 12 games in a row a couple of years ago. Haven't gotten to the AFC or the NFC Championship since 96. That's I was five, Oren. I was 5 years old.
Been a long ass time.
Yeah, man. I mean, come on. No, Jerry Jones. Maybe they do, but it won't matter. They're still the third best team in their division, and they're not winning anything as long as Jerry's at the helm. Unfortunately, sorry.
And question number five: the Jaguars and old Duval down there.
Duval.
Yes. They want to get the ball in Travis Hunter's hands on offense a bit more.
Sounds like a good idea.
Trying to game plan him open, get him in space, utilize that playmaking ability that Travis Hunter has. True or false, Mr. Hunter does not go over 100 yards receiving in any game this entire season.
No. False. He'll get it together. I mean, that would be an unmitigated epic disaster of all proportion. If you trade up and give up all those assets to get him and he doesn't do anything, woof, that would be awful. All right, 404-726-0929. Great job on the true and false as always. Coming up next, this is fun. We had Hawks media availability today. We had a bunch of people on the station, and I heard a bunch of these interviews. The guy who stood out to me, because I was going to replay one of them, the best one in my opinion. You want to know who that is? It was Luke Kennard, who had a really great interview today on the station. We'll play that for you next as we welcome in a Hawks season as we get underway, and then right back to the football conversation on 92.9 The Game. It's Chris Thomas tonight.